Welcome to the Amplifying Leadership Podcast. I am your host, Tara Lehman, a partner, coach, and consultant at Twin Life Coaching and Business Services, of which Amplifying Leadership is a division. This podcast is a place dedicated to amplifying your leadership through our guest stories, tips, information, and more. To learn more about our leadership division, please visit us at amplifyleadership.ca. Today, I am welcoming Rob Leone, Professor of Human Resource Development at Idaho State University and the co-founder of Black River Performance Management, where apparently, Rob, your motto is work should fuel the spirit, not drain it. Love that. Welcome to Amplifying Leadership.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here today.
So why don't you just start by telling us your story, where you got to in leadership?
Yeah. So my introduction to leadership was, I think, like a lot of people, at an undergraduate level as a resident assistant, starting to mix with people, learn from people. And that was kind of the inception point. And as I graduated from college, I went into kind of junior leadership roles that were full-time and more professional, eventually into more sophisticated leadership roles. When I had 12 direct reports, I think we had about 250 employees overall. And then from there, I started to transition into more thought leadership as it relates to, I'm having fun. This is making sense. Some of this doesn't seem like the best way to do things. I need to continue my education to better understand more about the system, the people, all this other stuff. So I went on, finished a doctorate, and then eventually, I am in a position right now where I'm a professor and a consultant. And the beautiful thing, and I feel very fortunate for this, is that I teach working professionals in master's and undergraduate programs. I take it from an academic research-based approach, but I bring in my industry experiences. And when we have our conversations, it's not, this is the theory and this is how it works. This is the theory. It advises our thinking about how things actually work in the field. And we spend a lot of time in the gray space. I think that's one of the criticisms that academics get, and deservingly in some instances, that it's when we approach things through theories and very formal, rigid frameworks, it becomes very black and white. And as you know, and I know, that is not how life is. There's so much nuance gray out there.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is that I continue to get, you know, I learn and research and build tools in that academic arena. And then I'm working with clients daily. And so my clients are the beneficiaries of kind of the creative works that I'm doing, because they don't have to sit through a 16-week course learning about motivation. Yeah. I build a model that's based off of the science. It's very easy to consume, easy to digest. And then we integrate it into our organization with just a little kind of a splash on the front end of the science behind it, but really focusing on transfer and application.
Yeah. And I mean, real world is real world. It's not what may be in a textbook. So I like that you have that nice mix of doing things like that, because I think it's really important that we recognize that theory is one thing, but applying it in the real world could be totally different. It might work great, but we could also come up with a lot of roadblocks, right?
Yeah, I think about it in terms of the classes we teach. Everything's project-based, and we are constantly having our students go back to organizations or their own organization to use the tools and things that we're building. And it's just, it demonstrates, it reminds me of the somewhat incongruence between academics and the real world, and that sometimes our projects take too long and the real world's moving faster, or sometimes the real world is messier and it complicates the project and it becomes a really good learning experience that, I just don't take and add answers in the empty lines, and that's how we figure out how to run a diagnosis of a performance deficiency. I actually have to be flexible, approachable, curious, things like that.
Yeah. This brings us right into our topic, actually, because you're starting to talk about it. I want to talk about workplace culture and the development of it today. And it is something that certainly resonates with you. Why is that?
To me, it's the grease in the gears, right? If the organization is a big system, a bunch of cogs, And people are messy and emotional, but this is all part of our beautiful human nature, right? Like
Absolutely.
those are things that we have to work with. We can't deny that those things exist, and we have to work with those things. And the culture, investing in the culture, investing in building the relationships, getting to know your team really becomes the grease to those gears. Right, to the point that if you and I have to have a difficult conversation, it buys us space, right? I might have to
Yes.
give you some feedback or hold you accountable, but if you know that our relationship in this culture is built on trust and respect, and I'm really looking out for the best of you, the feedback might still sting. There's no doubt about that, right? We're human, it stings, but you also know that I got your back and you're doing this out of really good intentions because you yourself actually want to know, right? It's one thing that it
Yes.
stings, but it's another thing afterwards when you're like, you know, but I needed to hear that, or I needed to see the way type of thing. So culture is essential to me. But the other side of it, I don't want to be recognized as this culture company because we're ultimately focused on performance. But performance, you don't have to make a choice between culture and performance. They go hand in hand. And they need to be handled together. I think where we lose our ground is when what leaders of either camp think their only camp is the priority, right? We've seen this in one of the slippery slopes of culture work is that organizations become too consumed with culture, and then they don't focus on the tasks that need to be done, or vice versa, they're too concerned with outcomes. But the culture's kind of festering, and you have new problems there. Like, we really embody this that we bring them together to accomplish them both together.
There is that sweet balance somewhere, isn't there, where you have a great culture that brings you in the results. And you know, there's a lot of companies out there who they are very financial focused and they forget all about the people, or they're, like you said, very people focused and they forget about what their vision even is to get the results they want. So I think there is a nice healthy balance that can happen. But and as we know, and like there's a lot of change going on out there in the world, and some companies are growing and others are shrinking, and trying to maintain some sort of balance with that can be a little bit more difficult. Do you have any experiences to share with us where you saw that balance became difficult and how that may have been overcome?
So it's really important to acknowledge that everything ebbs and flows and everything has seasons, right? And so it might be a time that we just have to buckle down and focus on performance and what's ahead of us to hit some specific milestones. But then we get a chance to breathe. It's kind of like, you know, the benefit of having like a Thanksgiving break or a winter break or something. Like, we could slow down a bit and regroup. And we can't just rely on our people doing that in their private life. They have to do that in their professional life too, in the sense of we need to cut out space. So we might have a really tough quarter or maybe 2 quarters in a row that we're really grinding, but we need to create space to do a couple different things, check in with each other. But the other thing is, you know, something like a stop, start, and continue activity in terms of what's worked well, what hasn't worked well. What do we need to continue to do? What should we start now? What should we throw out? So that we're constantly in a state of review to determine, you know, what's my strategy and what's my direction. I was having a conversation with someone yesterday, and actually, you know, being on LinkedIn, as we all are, we get hammered all the time with these B2B sales and what you want
Absolutely.
our services. And I just, you know, I twice a year I do a review of what the next 6 months is going to look like, and what the ambitions are for that next 12 months, so that I'm constantly tweaking strategy and
Excellent.
effort and energy, so that what I'm doing continues to fuel me and fuel my people, not just being stuck in the cycle. And so we can take time to do both, and we need to do both. Sometimes the priority shifts at different times.
Yeah, and I think I want to add to that as well. When we are going through that whole results focus time period, you can bring in people to ask their opinion about, you know, solutions to problems you may be facing, right? Because that continues to build that kind of inclusivity that a culture might have, right? Your opinion on that. You're nodding your head. Your audience can't see that, but yeah.
Absolutely. Like, we just rolled out what we call our 5-I engagement model. So how do you
Okay.
create and cultivate engagement in your teams and organization, but also in communities, right? Like I believe the organization is best described as a community, not as a family. And so we do need to be included. And the first I in the engagement model is include people in the process, include people in the conversation, right? Bring people into the fold, let them be aware of what's coming up. And of course, we can't do this lockstep every single time. But I think in
Right.
many instances, and I say I know in many instances when I encounter this, people are not doing it frequently enough when they have the opportunity. And we spend so much time
Yeah.
talking about change management and buy-in, and this is the solution to that. Like the framework helps improve the adoption of change because it's changing the stakes and it's changing the participation much earlier on in the process. And then if we are community, then we share and collaborate together based on everyone's inputs. And but it's also the same things, that we've seen before. Like leaders take perspective and opinions from people, but just because I take your perspective and opinion doesn't mean I'm going to, do what you told me to do or ask me to do, because I have to balance your wishes and beliefs and expectations against the other 200 on our team. So
Yeah,
there's a
exactly.
dance here that needs to occur. But once again, getting back to that culture piece, culture smooths all of this. And culture is going to occur from design or default. We get to choose how we want that to be. And the other thing we say is you're going to pay for it at some point, whether you do it on the front end or if you have to clean up a mess on the other end. Culture is always central to all these issues.
Yeah.
What's it going to be for you and how do you want to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to come back to, you're absolutely correct. Just because we hear your ideas, we're accepting of them, we're listening to them. But sometimes it could be even simple as budget doesn't allow it, let alone everybody else's opinions or what the vision is or whatever. But having a culture where we can easily accept that, we're going to listen, we want your possible solutions because maybe the one we have isn't ideal. And maybe it's a mix of yours and mine. It's a mix of something else, or maybe it's a partial piece that we need. I mean, it's so important to build that culture around really listening to people's opinions, whether or not we can do them, and letting people know that as well, that we may not be able to. But I love that you mentioned that as well, because I think it is a key point in great cultures is that we hear you, we're listening, and we love that you're sharing ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
essential.
It's essential. Let's talk a little bit more about complexities of, culture. So a culture could be great and stable for many years, and then you get something complex happen. We all are living through economic complexities, or maybe there's some other complexities out there. I don't like to do too much about that stuff, but complexities come up, whether in your organization or outside your organization, that affect it. And there can then be fear. One of the biggest fears I remember is, are we closing, which was around the US 2008, 2009, a recession, things like that. And so those fears build up and they cause cultures sometimes to have a step back. And in worst case scenario, some of them fall altogether. Those cultures need to be rebuilt. Are there any strategies that you can provide our listeners with? Maybe how can we lead through that to make sure that even if the culture takes a step back, we can rebuild it through complexities?
So if I could change the scope slightly, because I think you'll
Yes, of
get to
course.
this from a different vantage point. I often tell both the people I work with as well as the people that tell me they don't need help that we're often one bad hire away from the problem. So to your point, cultures change, complexities change the nature of the culture and it can be trying on the system. Just think about one poor hire, right? And now
Yeah.
think about the volatility around that our hiring mechanisms historically and across the board are not that strong. How we screen people is often really riddled with bias, and it often focuses on the wrong aspects, right? And if you think about this, what's the candidate's number one objective during the interview? It's to sell
Get that
themselves, it's
job.
to land a
Yeah.
job, even though they might not be interested in the work that needs to be done, or they don't have the strength in that area. And this is my point, that our systems of how we've done hiring for many groups need enhancement, is that how do you see that, right? And so there's two different aspects to this, in my opinion, that are really strong. If you have the strong cultural piece in place, you can buffer and almost pre-board them, even during the interviewing process, of what to expect while you come here, as well as it gives us a better sense of who we're looking for. Can we design our search strategy around not job qualifications, but actual this marrying of experience with personality type with this position, so that they can become, a good fit for the organization, good person job fit, person organization fit, and person culture fit. And so going back to the culture overall and the grease, the quality and the integrity of that system, and what might work for 1 year might not be good for the next year. But having an open mind and ongoing conversations about learning and development as a learning system, we can become much more nimble and responsive to economic downturn. To all of a sudden, you can't come to work today because of a virus, or all of a sudden you have to come back to work and then you don't want to leave your home anymore. Like all these different things, it makes it easier to have these conversations where we can connect with closer to the reality and the truth of it. So one of the things that I'm sensitive to is this return to work concept, where these organizations are bringing, hey, look, starting May 1, everyone has to be back in the office. And then we hear this outcrying and outpouring of, no, I don't want to do it. I'm more productive at home. It doesn't fit my needs. I relocated. I don't even live near the office anymore. The challenge here, though, is that this is the organization is essentially the petri dish that we get to work in. And we are the beneficiaries of the work we provide to them. They benefit from us, but we also receive something in return called income, right? Money. And so I don't like where we're at right now, where we're giving so much attention to, and I might make some enemies with this, but so much attention to people not wanting to go back to work and trying to make it difficult for the organization. Like, no one says you have to work for whomever. That's the beautiful thing. You're in Canada, I'm in the US. Like, we have tremendous discretion over where we work. And
It's a
so
choice.
if you can't work from home anymore and that's really important to you, there's a lot of other great organizations that have those opportunities. It's kind of like, well, I don't get paid enough for this job. Well, this is where you're at, and this is the best we can do. So you have some options. But getting back to the culture piece, it makes it that much easier to have these conversations and hear each other, not just piss each other off. You know what I mean? Like, oh, she's against
Absolutely.
me, and it's the leader. It's just creating, it's this little bit of a marginalization and almost a dehumanization, that that's the corporation and they're not interested in us. And it's just much more complicated than that. So I think the
Absolutely.
culture piece is essential, that how we're building it, what does it look like, who are the players in it. Also quality. Think of it in terms of, what are you feeding your culture when you're doing your culture work? And is it actually a healthy material? Is it tested material? Is it tried material? Or is it just something that you had at your last organization that may or may not be relevant or dated, or even be appropriate for the team that you have with you, right? So we see stuff like this, that, hey, let's just bring in this. We did this at this last company and it doesn't fit, and they spend this money on it. And it's fun, it's interesting, and it raises some awareness, and but it could have been better. So we have to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the organization and their identity and their ambitions.
I want to take the complexity to a different level now because this happened to me in my very early career. I was part of a company and there was another company and they merged and the cultures did not match each other. And what happened with the leadership team is they fought openly in the office at the time when I was on the phone and others were on the phone. They fought and fought and it became so toxic. I left without another job. That was my choice when we were talking about choice earlier, right? How can we make sure if we're leading a team in some of that kind of bigger complexity when things like that happen, We're holding on to or rebuilding a culture that's going to work. Now, I know every situation can be different, right? There could be board of directors dealing with, whomever, but any just high level thoughts from you on that?
Yeah, I love this topic. And I love this topic at merger and acquisition, but I also love this topic as a key leader transition.
Yes.
Because sometimes we're transitioning out toxic leaders or really great leaders, or and in my opinion, there's work to be done before we do this transition. Because
Yes,
leaders,
yeah.
so if you take that merger framework and the conflict between the two different organizations coming together, part of it is just super basic in terms of they only know what they know, and what they've been doing, they believe it works and it's been comfortable. So we need to make sure that there's someone above them or adjacent to them to really facilitate. You have your grounds, you have your
Right.
reasons to feel this way, but there's also some other things for us to consider. And what I don't like happening is when we do have a merger and it really feels like, look, all of our identities being like stripped of us, and now we have to, I think about, Home Depot and Lowe's. If we were to merge them, we have to stop wearing orange and we have to be blue
Right.
and do
Yeah.
things like them. And there's a way that we can find a happy medium between the two that we bring the best, hopefully, of each situation out. Similar to prior to hiring a new CEO, a new leader, a new executive, that what is it that we need to have in terms of conversations before we go to market, or concurrently while we're going to market looking for what's out there. It's almost a form of therapy and preparation for what change is going to come, right? And some organizations think like, hey, look, we have a super culture. This guy's retiring. This woman's going to step in and just take over where he left off because she was an internal. But the problem is that part of the culture is tied to his vision, his understanding, and this
Right.
unique touch of it. And she might not have any of that. And so just because they're from the same system and they wear the same color polos doesn't mean that they have the same beliefs, the same operation,
100%.
tactics, stuff like that. So I love that question because not enough employees and organizations are doing this. And that's a little front-end care before we go to market, before we make this change, before we merge the groups, to really understand what does this look like for us moving forward, and how do we make this as peaceful and pleasant as possible.
Because sometimes it's not seamless, but yeah, that before merger, before acquisition, or just before, I'm working with a client right now who they're changing the CEO and it's not happening yet. So what we're doing is I'm working with them to try to determine how is this going to work? The vision's going to change. So what does that look like? And let's talk to our people. Communication, right? You've alluded to that a few times. So let me just touch on that real quick. Communication is extremely important when there's complexities and things going on, and we're trying to lead through this and lead through these changes. What are your thoughts on the best ways to do that?
So I have this conversation frequently. One of the biggest challenges we have is that we speak a different language, even though we're both speaking English. Your framework, your mental framework's different than mine. But also, even the language we use as a part of how we express ourselves and our frameworks is different. So, even something as simple as term motivation or communication, there's work to be done there at a really foundational level to make sure we're on the same page. Compare that
Right,
to
yes.
if we both went to engineering school. The jargon's clear, right? You know what
Right.
the terms are, and there's no disputing what that means to do X, Y, and Z. But as it relates to the softer, quote unquote, softer side of staff and work and things like that, we don't have that. So there's no wonder we continually have breakdowns in communication because we don't know how people are really interpreting what it is that we're talking about. So part of our work in many instances is establishing baseline things in the organization so that we do personality assessments, we do psychometrics, we do these different tools so that we at least have a framework of what does communication look like for you versus me, and how do we come together almost like a dance? How do we step in together and dance together so that we're being more effective in these communication processes? And you're right, it is essential. Like, We can't read each other's mind, but we also can't be
No,
too
yeah.
short and rush through things out of this like time scarcity mindset. We actually have to spend time to build the relationships, to connect with each other, to take pause and reflect and determine where we've been, where we're going, so that we're in alignment moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's a little bit about knowing who these people are that we're trying to communicate to, because everybody does take information in differently. You're absolutely correct. We could read the same sentence and
Yep.
you could be mad and I could be happy and it'd be saying the
Exactly.
same thing. We're just reading it differently, right? So
Yep.
yeah, communication is one of those things, is a bit more of know who you're talking to so that you're communicating in a language or in a way that they understand. And if, you know, we're speaking English, so somebody's language, second language, it's a second or third language for them, maybe visuals are helpful. You know, there's just different ways of helping people as we go through these complexities and these challenging times. I think we could talk forever about this topic because it's big and it's out there
It
right
is.
now. But if you had to sum it up for our audience, including communication, what would you say, you know, when we consider culture and we consider the change and the complexities around what's going on, what could you sum up for us, or some key tips that you could sum up for us that might help our leaders out there deal with what's going on, either with change or their economies or their businesses?
Yeah,
Any?
so absolutely. I'm coming off of a semester right now. We're just about done where we're focusing on performance, organizational performance, and we do a lot of diagnosis in it. I think a message that's important for leaders to hear, there has to be a level of humility in leadership to realize that what I see is not necessarily the truth or the whole truth. And sometimes we're just too close to the problem to really, truly, accurately diagnose it. That what we're interacting with are the symptoms, and that there's usually something much deeper that's contributing factors that's leading to the erosion, to the problem, to the breakdown, to the deficiency, to the gap. And so it's just one of those things that it's not an easy solution because it says, well, I'm not necessarily equipped to work through this, so I needed some assistance. But at the same time, you could bring your people in to help you think through these things, like use surveying tools, use focus groups to determine, am I seeing what you're seeing? Are you seeing what I'm seeing? And start to figure out what's actually happening here, and so that they can make better decisions. Like, I don't want, when I work with organizations, I want to be a great steward of their funds. And I want their funds to be investments, not expenses. And so it's really important for me to get down to the levels where we really need to be addressing the root causes and true contributing factors. And that is something I aspire for the leaders also, is just keep in mind that your assumption and belief might not be 100% accurate. I ran into this a couple weeks ago in a workshop with a diverse group of leaders, so different companies. And one of the CEOs said, you know, we all have to just have our know our why and our purpose. And I said, well, that's kind of convenient for you to say as a CEO that's making six figures. I said, one of the things I want you to keep in mind is that your love for your work might be very different than your people's love for the work. And they can't necessarily have that same experience as you have. They might be looking for, you know, just what's my next opportunity to get a pay bump so I can afford rent on time? And it's just different factors, right? This purpose conversation, I think, is it's been thrusted on us. And it's not a solution for a lot of groups. If your group is overall at a level that can move to the purpose as it relates to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, great. Have those conversations. It makes it stronger, makes it deeper, makes it richer. But in most of our organizations, we have people that are struggling with all sorts of basic need issues, relational, you know, financial things like that. Those are often the true sources for issues that are breakdowns in the organization, that and system inefficiencies. So just a couple things to consider. I know they kind of fly in the face of some of our conventional thoughts of what leaders do and know. Like I said, there's got to be a level of humility to realize that I don't know everything. I'm trying hard, but I also need to realize that my people are trying their best too, based on what they have.
Yeah, and it's even understanding their why may be personal. Like you said, it could be financial. It could be I need to put food on the table.
Exactly.
That's okay. That's their
Yeah.
purpose of doing what they do every day, right? They need to put food on the table and they want to improve so they can get that promotion. And that's
Yeah.
where the other side comes in, right? The other purpose comes in. Okay,
Yeah.
let's grow you. This is what I see you need to do, and let's fill the gaps type conversation, right? So there is
Yeah.
like a little bit of both. You have to understand their why, and it may not be for your business. You're absolutely right. This day and age, I hear
Yeah.
too many times how much it is about money right now.
Yeah, don't and
Yeah.
don't marginalize them because their why is
No.
different than you, right? I think one of our biggest generational challenges is less about generation and not understanding how needs work. And when you and I were 21, our needs at that time weren't very different than the 21-year-olds today. You right? You
True.
wanna, you might need to buy a car, you might need to pay for housing, you wanna eat, you wanna have enough money to have some social experiences in your life, things like
Yeah.
that, right? So it's no wonder that some of the mission factors of the company are not as relevant or important to you because you're looking at this through a different paradigm.
I think that's a great way to finish our conversation because when we are talking about change and complexity and culture, everybody visions it differently and sees things differently. We really need, as leaders, to recognize that and recognize it's not always about what we want, right?
Yes, excellent.
All
Thank
right. Well,
you.
thank you so much for being on. If our audience wanted to find you on LinkedIn or learn more
Yeah.
about you online, are there ways they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. So if you go into LinkedIn, just type in Rob or Robert. And the last name, as you mentioned, is Leon, but it's spelled like Lion, Lion. So Rob and then Lion on LinkedIn. If you want to go to our company's website, Black River Performance Management's the company. And so the URL is Black River, the letter P for performance, the letter M for management.com. So blackriverpm.com. And you can look at our blogs that we have there, our other podcasts, bios of the founders, keynote topics, just different things there. And our models page should actually help pull some of the pieces together for people where we share, like I mentioned, our engagement model, our motivation model, our performance model, things like that, to really help people be more effective at doing what they want to do.
Sounds like a few great resources there. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing some really valuable information and insights today. Greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you.
If you are a leader who knows that leadership development and growth through coaching and consulting are key to your leadership journey, or you'd like to learn more about our Rise to Leadership program, please visit us anytime at amplifyingleadership.ca, a division of Twin Life Coaching and Business Services. And before you go, don't forget to grab this quarter's free resource, Your Guide as a New Leader. It is designed to support your new leaders in their first few weeks to build credibility, gain trust, and get a strong foundation for leadership. The link will be in the episode summary. Until next time, remember, leadership matters.